This is the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm Joe Rimmer, and today, deadline day, I'm joined by Paul Gorst. How are we, Paul?
All good. Busy one, as always, but yeah, looking to get stuck into it, to be honest, because there's a lot to talk about.
You and I have long come in ready for a long night.
Yeah. I mean, even when Liverpool are quite quiet, it's still always busy, and still always one or two loose ends to tie up and whatever else. But today there's actual things happening, so I think we'll be here till certainly after midnight.
Yeah, a man who's been here for a little bit longer is Theo Squires. Theo, you've been here since this morning in Jurgen Klopp's press conference. How are you?
Bit tired, but we soldier on. That's what he says, plenty to sink our teeth into. Keeps you going, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, we are coming to you live. It's just gone 5 o'clock. UK time, and I mean, anything could happen, so we'll try and keep this fairly tight to a tight half an hour or so, because things are changing all the time. And let's start with some breaking news, Gorsty, from just 5 minutes or so ago, which was that Bayern Munich's deal to sign Fulham's Joao Paulinho is off, which leaves Liverpool in something of a slightly difficult position, doesn't it?
Yeah, so if you see me checking my phone, it's basically I'm not checking my Instagram or whatever. I'm trying to see if people have messaged.
Taking selfies.
Yeah.
So now the baby is.
Just before we recorded, wasn't it? Come out from Florian Plettenberg in Germany that Joao Paulinho's move from Fulham to Bayern Munich has fallen through. Bayern obviously determined to get themselves a number six through the door, and that's basically what has allowed Liverpool to bring Ryan Gravenberch in, isn't it? Because if they're getting someone in, then he's surplus to requirements. So the dominoes looked like they were falling into place for Liverpool on Wednesday, and then obviously yesterday they given the green light for him to fly to England for his medical. And then just as we're recording, it looks as though that could be a snag on Bayern's end. So we're waiting to see what happens with Liverpool, whether it's still all okay to go through, or whether Bayern have second thoughts, or is it even at a stage where they're able to have second thoughts and basically reject it out of hand. We still don't know as we're recording, but that is part of the madness of deadline day. I mean, it never fails to amaze me the way teams leave it to the last hours to get the business done, but I think if you speak to people inside the football, they're able to offer you a little bit more of a kind of insight as to why it does happen. It's basically just a kind of domino effect of teams looking to do business, and you see it all throughout the food chain, not near the pecking order, that, you know, teams need to get player A in before they can sell player B, and then that kind of has a knock-on effect right the way through. So we'll wait and see if this one affects Liverpool. Hopefully it doesn't, and Ryan Gravenberch does become the fourth midfielder through the door. But at the moment, I guess it's anyone's guess, because it's literally only just happened, hasn't it? It's only just broken.
I mean, is there just a bit of good faith involved for Liverpool and Bayern Munich now in terms of, like, Bayern, you know, they've agreed all this deal with Liverpool. Do they let that go through? And also with the player as well, who I think he's desperate to go, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, even without Joao Paulinho, you know, Gravenberch has only played 10 minutes this season. He didn't feature in the Super Cup defeat to Leipzig. He didn't play in the 4-0 winning it to Werder Bremen. And then he played 10 minutes against Augsburg last week, or was it last week? Recently, anyway. So it's not like they absolutely, you know, we're relying on him if they didn't get someone else in. But Thomas Tuchel apparently has been insistent on getting a number six, and Theo, you'll be able to speak to that a bit more, won't you? Because you spoke to Christian Falk, who's obviously very clued up at Bayern Munich, and I think he spoke to you a bit more about that, didn't he? But we'll wait and see what happens. Hopefully it's, you know, the two deals are kind of a little bit irrespective of themselves at this stage, but it's not good, is it, when, you know, the team who were looking to get in a player, you know, that kind of falls through as you're looking to sort your own deal. So we'll wait and see. But it really is anyone's guess at the moment whether Gravenberch becomes a Liverpool player.
Yeah, well, Theo, you spoke to Christian Falk, who, for those who don't know him, is a Bayern Munich journalist. He's German, based in Germany. What did he have to say? Is it a case of, you know, I thought you looked slightly worried when you saw the Paulinho deal fall through before. I don't know, having a conversation with him, does it make you think this one might not happen now?
Yeah, I'm feeling a bit pessimistic about it at the moment, to be honest. Like, Gravenberch is a player we know Liverpool have wanted for a long, long time. There have been talks pretty much all year long, really, weren't there? There were discussions, I think, with his agent back in January, and then they met his family in April. Yeah. But Bayern didn't want to let him go in January. The only reason that sort of changed is because the sporting director was sacked at the end of last season, But even then, they didn't want to necessarily let him go. They still thought it was a long-term project. Granted, he's not a first-choice midfielder for them. But Thomas Tuchel has been adamant that he wants a number six midfielder, and this is what Pellegrini would have been. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the funds to go and sign one off the back themselves because mm-hmm. they spent $100 million on Harry Kane. Obviously, they tried to get Declan Rice earlier in the summer as well. So that's why they were willing to sacrifice Gravenberch to get Pellegrini. But if you don't get Pellegrini, you still want that extra body in midfield. It depends to what Bayern value it as here. Do they want that extra body knowing they're going to win the Bundesliga anyway? Like, they were pretty poor last year and they still won the Bundesliga on the last day. Or do like the respect the player's wishes? Like, yeah. He's not going to be happy now if they keep hold of him when he's flowing through and he's got the move that he wants seemingly for so long. When it's all about Bayern, we're only going to sell him because they needed the money. Well, if you're not getting Pellegrini and you suddenly don't need the money, so mm-hmm. maybe they do want to keep hold of him for another 6 months. Like, we've seen that situation before with Liverpool, like the other way, like how dominoes fall together but then doesn't quite land the right way. We shall see, but it just depends on Bayern now whether they think we let him go, we'll do the best for the player, or we do what's best for us. If you were a Bayern fan, you'd want the club to be selfish.
Yeah, well, that's it. And I think surely the player has got a big say here. Surely he's really going to be very, very unhappy if this deal falls apart at the last moment. You know, he's done his medicals, hasn't he? You know, pretty much everything is in place. I'd be surprised if he hasn't done club media and put his shirt on and all that just so that he can hit the button when this all goes through. So surely, from his point of view, I mean, he's going to be a very unhappy... He's not going to be good to have around the camp, is he?
Particularly as he doesn't really play much for Bayern. It's not like he's going to be going back to Bayern Munich and he's being told that he's in at the weekend because, you know, playing whoever it may be. He's probably just going to be a reserve, isn't he, for the rest of the season. So he'll be desperate for this move to come through. And then, like Theo says, it's just a case of how nice do Bayern want to be about it. You know, football can be a ruthless thing, but do Bayern... You know, kind of show a bit of good faith here. We'll see. But
Tuchel doesn't strike me as the type of guy. He's quite a tough guy, isn't he? And I get a feeling he might just say, "No, you're staying put."
Yeah.
He's not like a Klopp who, I think if that was Liverpool, Klopp would probably let the player go.
I think so. Yeah, but
unless it's Nat Phillips.
Unless it's Nat Phillips.
Yeah. That's a good point. It depends on how much of a say he has. Yeah. I know kind of Bayern restructured their sporting director side of things the near summer. Oliver Kahn and. Mm-hmm. Was it Sally Hamazic basically sacked within minutes of them winning the Bundesliga as a kind of, we won the Bundesliga but we shouldn't be winning in the final 15 minutes. Heads have got a roll. Not too sure how the hierarchy works there now, but...
Seems like Tuchel's got a bit more power this window, but then he won't going forward when they get a proper succession in place.
Yeah, so I guess it is just a case of how... amicable Bayern want to be about it all, and that's anyone's guess.
I did ask Christian Falk if Liverpool's good relationship with Bayern could aid things. Obviously Thiago, Mane, those deals, they were quite affordable for both clubs compared to prices in the market, and he basically said no. He said it's a business decision. Bayern would have sold them to Manchester United if they'd gone for McTominay instead of Pellegrini. So you've got to think Bayern, when they're going to have eyes on the Champions League, they're going to be selfish. They're going to be putting themselves in, well, we want to do this, this and this, make sure we're covered as well as we can be. It's, well, Gravenberch isn't part of the plans. Like, there was a press conference Tuchel's done recently. He's gone through his midfield options and he didn't even name Gravenberch. So in his head, he's gone. Like, he said that in his press conference today, pretty much. He said that it's clear what the outcome's going to be. But I'm sure when he said the outcome is clear, he thought he was getting a number six in. So he's feeling the same now a few hours later.
I suppose before we move on, we should clarify that none of this is Liverpool's problem. It, you know, it's not a Liverpool issue that we're talking about here. It's just a kind of knock-on effect. And that's what you leave yourself open to, I guess, on deadline day. But at the moment, as far as we're aware from Liverpool's end, everything's still proceeding as you'd expect and you'd hope.
It's like when you're buying a house, you get stuck in a chain. Something falls through further along. Yeah. Just waiting and see.
Leaving you sweating. I mean, in terms of Gravenberch, we haven't really discussed him, I don't think, in detail on the pod. You know, some Liverpool fans might remember him from a couple of years back when Ajax played Liverpool in the Champions League. But, I mean, he looks like one of those multifunctional, very modern midfielders, doesn't he?
Yeah. I mean, I think I mentioned it on another pod about this kind of uproar that Liverpool weren't targeting another number six once they got Endo through the door. And a lot of that, I think, was just semantics. I think when you're a player who plays in a Jürgen Klopp midfield, particularly at Liverpool, I think you've always got the capabilities of playing in two or three positions in that midfield. you know, Jordan Henderson did it, didn't he? Number six or number eight, and Thiago's done it. Gini Wijnaldum, perfect example. So I don't necessarily think that Gravenberch is coming in and that absolutely means that Liverpool have only bought the one number six or defensive midfielder, if you like, in old money. And I think he's young enough to be moulded and kind of remodelled into that defensive midfielder if Klopp wishes. He's certainly done it before with, you know, the likes of Firmino and Wijnaldum, like Joe says, perfect example. Cody Gakpo at the moment is doing it, isn't he? Obviously made his name as a left-sided forward, and he's being more of a number nine and even a kind of midfielder at some point. So there is the potential there to remould Gravenberch into kind of what Klopp wants. But we'll see if he does want a more of a defensive-minded midfielder, or whether he wants him to play his natural game as a more box-to-box number eight. So I think he's got loads of upside, really. You know, he's only young. I think if he hadn't have had this stalled year at Bayern and he was coming directly from Ajax at the age of 21 with what he'd done at Ajax already behind him, I think there'd be loads of excitement around him.
Yeah, that's what was interesting about Thomas Tuchel's comments earlier, because we've always assumed Gravenberch comes in, you mould him into a number six and it's in this new formation with the box midfield.
Yeah.
Tuchel said he's got this opportunity to go and play in a 4-3-3. Now, speaking to Christian Falk, he said Gravenberch is more of an 8 or a 10. I think, well, where does he fit into this? Because the talk from Germany is still Jurgen Klopp sees him as perfect for Liverpool's formation. He's the perfect player who suits it as much as any other player he's had in the past. So it's like, well, how is that going to click into place when you've got McAllister, Szoboszlai? Yeah. Is Endo first choice, or are you wanting Trent to be more of that defensive midfielder? Where would Conor Bradley's role be in this if he wasn't injured at the moment? Like, we've not really had a chance to fully see what the plan is for Liverpool this season because of injuries, because transfers haven't been in the door, and now this transfer sort of being up in the air just adds to that uncertainty.
I just wonder whether it's get good players in the door and we'll sort it out as we go.
Yeah. I think there's an element to that. It's about options. At the end of the day, whether Liverpool play with three in midfield, with the box midfield, they will go from having, I mean, let's look through their midfield options. If they get Gravenberch, it will be Gravenberch, who's 21, Szoboszlai 22, Alexis McAllister 24, Endo's 30, Bacetic is still 18, or is he 19?
18.
Thiago 32. So it's quite a nice mix. 22.
Elliot 19. Yeah. 20.
It's quite a nice mix, isn't it, of young players with a couple of older ones to try and help them gain experience, and all players who can really, like you say, feature in a lot of positions. I think, I was going to ask you in a bit, I'll come to it later. But I think that's they're decent midfield options if Liverpool can get Gravenberch.
Yeah, and I think it's a bit of a targeted evolution, or maybe it's just been a gradual one through accident more than anything. But Liverpool's midfield now is more, you know, more ball oriented, if you like, as opposed to when Liverpool were at the best of Fabinho, Henderson and Wijnaldum. It was very much pressing from the front, getting the ball to the forwards as quickly as possible. Now a lot more comfortable in possession, you'd say, with the likes of McAllister and certainly Szoboszlai and even Trent in there, and Thiago obviously when he comes back. So I think maybe it's a little bit of an evolution in terms of the Liverpool's midfield this summer. And maybe they're thinking they can dominate possession more than they ever have.
Yeah, I think as well, if you look at the four signings, again, this is based on Gravenberch joining, but if you look at Gravenberch, Szoboszlai, so it's 40 and 60, 100 million, 35 for McAllister, 15 for Endo, so 150 million for four players. I mean, take the previous summers out of it, where I think Liverpool haven't planned well, and I'd still stick to that. I don't think they've planned well. I think they put themselves in a difficult position. But this summer, what they said they needed to do was get several bodies rather than a Jude Bellingham, who, cost an initial fee of, 80, 90 million. But probably agent fees, wages, everything else involved, you're looking probably 100 plus, aren't you? Caicedo, 115 million. Wages, agent fees, again, a lot of money. Throw Lavia into that. Liverpool have got four midfielders, 150 million, and four. I don't think. Put it this way, I'd rather have the four that Liverpool could get if they get Gravenberch as well than a Caicedo and a Lavia. Personally, just the Caicedo. And
Lavia. I think Szoboszlai is going to be a really top quality signing. delighted with McAllister. We all knew what he was about, didn't we? World Cup winner and the star of that Brighton team. Yeah. Really, you know, the Brighton team that finished sixth in the Premier League, him and Caicedo. I think if you'd have given me those four options at the beginning of June, I probably would have asked you who Endo was, but
you've asked me who the other three were.
I wouldn't have grumbled too much. The Caicedo thing was bizarre looking back. It was only 2 weeks ago, wasn't it? But it seems so long ago now and so surreal. But I think what Liverpool might hopefully do end up with it will be, I don't think too many can grumble. Certainly midfield wise, we can talk maybe separately about the centre back issues, but midfield wise, the midfield rebuild looks okay to me.
Yeah. Well, Theo, quickly before we move on from Gravenberch, what did Christian say? Why did he struggle in Germany?
He said basically they've got so many midfielders who are number eights that you've got to get past Goretzka, you've got to get past Thomas Müller, Kimmich, Musiala, and if you don't come in and hit the ground running, then you're playing catch up there.
Yeah.
So it was always hard for him there. Obviously, he's brought in as the sporting director's player.
Yeah.
Of course, he can say the name for me. It's the Serbian guy who I can't say.
Who's this?
Hassan, what's his face?
Oh, Salihamidžić.
There we go, that's the one. So, like, if he was brought in for one regime and then the manager goes and he's not quite clicking, it's not a good season for Bayern. And we saw with Sadio Mane as well. Like, he was one sporting director signing and a different manager. And this is a player we all know the quality of. And it didn't click at Bayern Munich. Mm. Then a new regime comes in and it's... Well, we're not really part of the future.
Yeah.
The only reason it's a bit different with Gravenberch is because he's 21. You can still turn that around. But Christian Falk's opinion was still, if you're not going to do it in your first season at Bayern, you're not going to do it at all. Like, they've got to be ruthless. As much as they like long-term projects, it is win the Bundesliga, try and win the Champions League every year.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why they signed Kane to win the Champions League, isn't it?
They're a lot more short-term in their thinking, aren't they, I suppose, than Liverpool or some of their rivals in the Bundesliga.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Theo, you were at Jurgen Klopp's press conference today. I mean, in terms of other signings, and a lot of us, certainly myself and Gorski included, I hope they would sign a centre-half, but Jurgen Klopp sort of probably killed that within the first few hours of the deadline day.
Yeah, he said he didn't want to kill off the deadline day excitement, but not to get carried away. Yeah. It seems like Liverpool are going to have to wait for that option. It's a situation they've been in before, isn't it? If the right signing's not there, they are happy to wait. They've still got Joel Matip for another year of his contract, presumably. And it just looks a bit... I suppose at the moment, when you know you're going into this weekend without Konate, without Van Dijk, you're down to the bare bones of a Matip and Gomez partnership, which was so awful back in, what, January, February, when they were like losing 3-0 away at Wolves and all this.
Mm-hmm.
But Gomez did look good from what I've heard at Newcastle last week. Matip had a reasonable pre-season. It's still a good backup centre-back partnership, and there's no reason why Gomez can't push on again. But if you've got this new Liverpool formation where it's essentially three centre-backs, you want 5-6 quality options there, and Liverpool don't have that. Like, Andy Robertson is not a centre-back. He's very much... like a square peg in a round hole, trying to get him to work there. So whether you change the system now because you haven't got it, but Liverpool seem happy to wait. Like, if Levi Colwill had said he was leaving Chelsea, he wasn't going to sign a new contract, maybe that's a deal they look to do. Like, they've been links with the Ecuadorian lad at Leverkusen. It seems like they weren't happy to let him go now. Maybe that's something they can revisit down the line. But they've still got youngsters there, like a Luke Chambers, who could maybe come on if he doesn't get a loan move in the next few hours. There's younger players there who get their chances in the Europa League. That maybe means it's not as much of a dire situation in 6 months' time when the January window opens.
I suppose the one thing you would say is that the Europa League doesn't bring the pressure of a Champions League.
Yep.
You're not looking at Liverpool to play. No, people aren't going to grumble if you play those sorts of players in Europa
League. Well, Endo could play centre-back as well, can't
But I would say, and Gorsi, you and I were chatting about this in the car on the way in, you know, you just said if they don't get the right man, they'll wait. Don't you think it's time Liverpool... start to rethink what the right person in terms of transfers is, because we've heard this over and over and over again, and it always bites them in the backside. I mean, that they wanted Levi Colwill. Well, I look at Levi Colwill and think, well, Liverpool, surely they must have known, and I'm sure they speak to agents and stuff, so they get a little bit of encouragement. But surely they must have known his first choice was to stay at Chelsea. And if Chelsea want to keep him, I mean, you've got to think that Chelsea probably wouldn't want to sell him to Liverpool anyway, because they're a rival.
Agents lie. Agents lie.
Brian had a 30 million bid rejected, didn't he?
And you throw in, you know, look at what happened with Caicedo. Agents lie. Agents use clubs. And obviously, his agent wanted to go to Chelsea and say, this lad is a man in demand. Mm-hmm. Liverpool want him, buy him, want him. Get him signed down to a contract, or we'll talk to those clubs. And I just think, I can't believe that Liverpool have put themselves in a position, again, where we could be looking 6 months down the line going, why didn't they sign centre-half?
I mean, it was hugely admirable for years, wasn't it? The right player stance. It brought in Alisson, it brought in Van Dijk.
Since then, though, who's it brought in?
Well, exactly. That's the point I was going to make. You know, Aurelien Tchouameni was the right man, and he's at Real Madrid, and Jude Bellingham was the right man, and he's at Real Madrid, and Caicedo was the right man, and he's at Chelsea, and to a lesser extent, Romeo Lavia, and he's at Chelsea. Yeah. So I think you're right. I do think this idealistic thing of Liverpool can only sign players who absolutely have to be here for 5-6 years and have to have the best years at Liverpool and have to be, you know,
the
potential to develop into world stars in the way, you know, a Salah or a Mane has or have. I think sometimes, like, there has to be a kind of a little bit more of an agile plan, because Liverpool don't need a Virgil van Dijk to come in, do they?
No.
They don't need, you know, a superstar centre-back. They just need someone who's going to provide a little bit of cover, a little bit of quality at a time, or in an area where, you know, there's question marks beneath the surface of Konate and Van Dijk. I mean, I'd love Joe Gomez to get back to 2020 levels, but it's been 3 years since he's been anywhere near his best, and there are dozens of reasons for that. And, you know, you could say the same for Joel Matip. It's been a while since he's been at his best as well, so a lot is riding on that. And I also think as well, if you've only got four senior centre-backs, it's time to make a decision one way or another on this fangled box formation. You know, what is Trent Alexander-Arnold now? Is he a number six? Is he a number 66 who has to play right back and centre mid? I just think there's a little bit of muddled thinking there with Trent, and it worked to an extent, didn't it, towards the back end of last season. Got Liverpool playing again, looking a lot more creative and a little bit sturdier at the back, but it asks a lot of Konate on the right side, and he's already pulled up with an injury because of that, because obviously Liverpool were playing with 10, weren't they, against Bournemouth. So it's time to decide for me, you know, one way or another.
I think as well, to me, the getting the right man thing, that kind of works if you're Man City and you're on top.
Yeah.
And every year you just change one or two. But when you're battling, and Liverpool have put themselves in a position now, I think, because when they were on top, they didn't get the right man. Now they're battling to get back up to the top. They have to take more chances, because there's increased competition. The right men are going to choose clubs who are, you know, like Real Madrid, like Man City, and they, you know, you Liverpool don't stand a chance, I think, if Real Madrid are in the race, because 9 times out of 10 a player will choose Real Madrid over Liverpool.
Well, that's not even the issue anymore. Like, they've been up against Chelsea and so many times they've lost this summer, and that's a club not in Europe at all. He's not going to start there, is he? But you know, like, Gusty's just gone through players that are waiting for the right one. Well, Alisson, they waited, what, 3 weeks before it was suddenly available again? So Karius could make a couple of mistakes in pre-season. There was nothing riding on that. Yeah. Whereas we saw how poor they were the first half of 17-18 defensively at times. And yeah, Van Dijk came in, transformed everything overnight, seemingly got them to a Champions League final. Mm-hmm. And they're in that position of strength. But when have they made a transfer like that since? Like, you look at other deals. Salah wasn't first choice. Mane wasn't first choice. They found these alternatives who were the right players who did work, and they're like, oh, they were much better than Mario Götze or Julian Brandt in hindsight. Now,
I don't understand why Liverpool aren't. I mean, I'm sure they are. I'm sure if anyone worked for the recruiting team and listened to this, they'd be pulling their hair out. But I would love to know the conversations, because, like you say, those players were, you know, as far as we know, second choice. Julian Brandt, they go and get Salah, you know. Who was the first choice? Goethe, of course. They go and get Mane. Surely Liverpool are looking at it going, you know, we've got several players on the list here. Unless they couldn't get any centre-back. But surely going into the start of the summer, they must have known, we need a centre-back. And the other thing that frustrates me is it's almost like they can't work on two deals at once.
Yeah.
It's like if they can get Gravenberch done tonight, then we'll go, oh, we've got 2 hours left. Can we start talking about centre-backs? I mean, I couldn't...
Well, the talk with the centre-back as well was they wanted this young fifth-choice player. Well, why don't you just move Joel Matip on and get someone who's going to be a starter and then have Jiro Kwanzaa as the young centre-back? Because at least then you're protected for the future with Van Dijk for a couple of years, as you'd like Salah to do. Instead, you're looking at a couple of fragile centre-backs. We've all got injury issues in the last couple of seasons. And from you've gone from Nat Phillips as your fifth choice, who, well, he isn't the perfect Jurgen Klopp centre-back. He's at least comes in, does a job whenever he's turned to. So now a teenager who's very talented, but he's had half a season alone at Bristol Rovers and now one substitute appearance. And while he did well against Newcastle United, say Gomez or Matip gets injured against Villa at the weekend in the first 20 minutes, you've got to throw Kwanzaa on then. Kanate's out for a while. Van Dijk gets an extended suspension because of his mouthing off at the officials, and you've not signed a centre-back. You're down to Gomez and Matip, or Matip, and a teenager. It's a big, big ask there.
Really, really quickly, because there's so much to discuss and we haven't got too much time. Is anything happening?
No, well, no, nothing major. Just, you know, according to our colleague Ian Doyle, who's out there working hard, the Gravenberch deal is irrespective of the Poligno one, so it looks like, you know, everything is still on course for that one.
That's good to know. That's good to know. Really quickly, because there's plenty of other things to talk about, and we can continue to talk about them in a minute. Van Dijk, do you think deserves a bigger ban? We won't debate the red card again because we've debated it, but taking into account the red card, that's gone. On top of that, deserve a bigger ban.
If you're doing it on the new rules where you're trying to clamp down on all this, yes. But when you look at how floaty the official was last week, shall we say that, then no, I suppose you've got to give him a bit of good grace. But I'd imagine he's going to get an extended suspension.
Just another match.
Yeah.
Yeah, funnily enough, just something in from the FA who have updated us on the Van Dijk situation. They're yet to... Well, detail of Liverpool have responded. They obviously had till today. They didn't need to do that. You wonder whether Liverpool have forgotten about it all with everything else that's been going on. Yeah, it'd be a shame to see him miss two games. I think Liverpool need to probably take the medicine on this one and just accept that. And he misses Villa and then regroup for after the international break against Wolves. Is it? Yeah. So.
But I mean that he will miss Wolves as well, won't he? If he gets an extended ban, that's the question.
Yeah.
Do you think that he should get an extended ban? I know it's a tough question.
Yeah, I mean, initially when it happened, I'd say James Parker obviously tweeting about the sending off and whatever else. So I didn't actually see the reaction initially, but he was very angry when he come off the bench and noticed or come towards the bench. That was right in front of us at St James Park. And
you won't have seen, but as he walked down the tunnel, I think the fourth official sort of gave him like a sort of come on, off you go type pat, and he turned around and sort of said, "Don't touch me." And then beep.
Yeah, it takes a lot to get Virgil van Dijk riled up. We speak to him most weeks, and he's always quite cool, whatever question you throw at him and whatever games it is that's happened. So he would have been hugely wound up there. I mean, I hope not. I hope it is just a one game ban, but could be the two, couldn't
it? Yeah, I think what you've just said, I think Liverpool have to take their medicine, and Van Dijk has to take his medicine on this, and I think it probably will and should be another game ban. I wouldn't go further than that.
Yeah, but also as well, I hope some consistency is enforced.
This becomes the problem, doesn't it? And I think for football fans, and you know, I don't get into conspiracies about referees, but I do think if you want to stamp out the way referees are spoken to, and they are spoken to very, very badly by players who may or may not have reasons to be frustrated, but if you want to stamp that out, you've got to dish out a ban. But for all that, you know, you can't have linesmen elbowing players and then just do a zoom call.
Wasn't it the VAR officials for these last two games without the two red cards? It has been Constantine, hasn't it? He's been the assistant on it. Has Anthony Taylor been the other one?
As a fan, I find it hard to accept that you can have an official aim an elbow, and irrespective of what Robertson, I'm sure, was giving him, you know, aim an elbow at a player, which is clear, we can see it on video evidence, and then just have him call the player and say sorry, and we just go, okay, that's done. Because otherwise, can Van Dijk just call the referee and say, sorry about that, he was frustrated, heat the moment, and we all go, okay.
Set up a little zoom.
It's fine. You know, exactly. And I think for fans, it's the same with Joe Linton waving cards, Anthony Gordon kicking the ball away. If you're going to do it, you have to commit to it. You can't just do the ones that the referee spots. You have to... everyone has to get a yellow card for kicking the ball away. I mean, early in the first game against Chelsea, didn't Trent get booked for time wasting?
Because Arsenal had a red card because the second, was it one of the yellow cards, was because of time wasting.
I thought that was absurd in the first half.
Did you just get bogged down in the laws? I mean, there's nothing I find more tedious than moaning about referees, but every year they bring in new guidelines and they always enforce it strictly to the letter for like the first 6 weeks and then it kind of just fades away sort of after Christmas, doesn't
it? Trent's been booked twice now. Yeah. Did he get booked in the middle game? But he's certainly been booked twice. He could serve a one-match ban and two of them bookings will have been throwing the ball back on the pitch. It didn't exactly lob it away to delay the free kick and taking a throw-in against Chelsea. I mean, that is absurd to me. And I think there'll be so many other players, like you say, that won't get booked. Why can't they tell referees, maybe this is a problem, to act with common sense and if you think they're genuinely time wasting, which you see all the time in the last 20 minutes of a game, then book them. But if it's a player looking to find another player from a throw-in, don't be daft.
Well, Tommy Asu got booked in here against Crystal Palace for Arsenal because
he wasn't the first one to take it, was he?
Perceived time wasting. And then he got sent off in that game because of it. The second one was just so... I think he dragged back... can't remember who it was, not Jordan Ayew possibly, and it was just two of the most ridiculous red cards you'll ever see, and then he's suspended. I was at Arsenal persuasion, you'd be absolutely furious with it. But I think Liverpool should probably do with a couple of weeks now where they just don't get embroiled. And I think with the referees, it's been going on now for a few months, hasn't it? Whether it's Constantine had Zidane's elbow and Robertson and all the fallout from that, Klopp celebrating in front of John Brooks' face, and then they put the Paul Tierney gate, shall we call it. And then already we've seen McAllister all at it, and then
it's doing them no favours. It's not like this whole, I always think it's a bit of a myth, the Jose Mourinho, Alex Ferguson style, like everyone's against us. I don't think that always necessarily works. If it's not certainly not working for Liverpool, I don't think anyway. Look, we'll move on quickly from referees, and just we'll start wrapping this up just in case anything should happen. But I want to ask you both: Liverpool get Gravenberch. Has it been a good window for Liverpool, Theo?
They've got to where they wanted to go in the end, but it's been a bit shambolic along the way.
So yes or no?
A cautious yes.
A cautious yes?
Yeah, I'll go along with that. It has at times been very different to what we've been used to from the Liverpool in the transfer market. Caicedo Gates was far so looking back now. 3-0 fall to Liverpool's, I suppose, but the optics of that were a bit weird. And Di Lavia, again, an odd one. But yeah, overall, I'd say so. The brief was a midfield rebuilding, and that's very much what they'll come up with.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the midfield, if they get Gravenberch over the line...
It does rest on Gravenberch, doesn't it?
Yeah, really pleased with that if they get Gravenberch. If they don't, then they've just about done enough. If they do, then I think they've refreshed the midfield quite well and got some really good deals. They started the window so well. The centre half thing, I think, could hang over this window longer than necessary. And I think ultimately they've coped well to deal with Saudi. And that's one thing we probably should just quickly address that we haven't talked about this before.
And we also haven't spoken about the Europa League draw either.
Yeah.
We did live this morning, the Europa race.
Salah, 150 million rejected today, wasn't it? An unbelievable amount of money, really. That would make him the third most expensive player of all time, possibly, behind Neymar and Mbappe.
Doyle just said that 200's coming in.
Well, I think the Daily Mail are reporting 200. I'm going to counter your 150. It's an unbelievable amount of money. I don't think it is an unbelievable amount of money. And I don't mean that in a flippant. I kind of hate when people go, it's only 5 million, pay it. That's ridiculous. But if you take it in context of, I keep thinking to myself, Liverpool got 145 million for Coutinho 5 years ago. And all right, granted he was much younger, but I think that the money that the Saudi League are throwing around, and if they're willing to offer wages of 1.5 million a week, then surely Liverpool should be saying, make an offer that makes us go, whoa, like 200 plus million, you're going, okay. Because there is no way Liverpool will deal for anything that's less than 200 million on deadline day.
Yeah, no, I certainly get where you're coming from that perspective. I just mean it in terms of like, 150 million for one player is just remarkable. But for all the money that the Saudi Pro League is throwing around for the wages, they're not really backing it up or matching it with the transfer fees, are they? No, there's not only bought this summer, you thought they paid a bit much for him.
It's Ruben Neves, the biggest one. Oh, they got the lad from Lazio. That was that a big fee as well? Well, a couple of midfielders around 50 million.
They paid like 90 million for Neymar, which is probably the going rate. They don't fleece themselves.
He's the same age as well as Neymar.
31, certainly Neymar. They don't fleece themselves. Trying to think. Fabinho 40 million, maybe a little bit above his market value given the 12 months that he's had. But
not
significant. Now they're all in line, aren't they, with what you'd expect. You know, if these players are being bought by European clubs, these are the sort of fees you'd expect them to be paying. So, you know, this thing that the Saudis are coming in and, you know, you can't turn them down. It's the players who can't turn them down because they're the ones who would have their heads turned on the contracts.
Salah, we've got to look at it as well. Like, we always talk about an English premium when you want those homegrown players. They want that poster boy. They want the Muslim poster boy. You can go to the Arab world and say, we've got the best player from this part of the world. And he is playing.
I get, by the way, I get from his point of view. And I think if we were having this conversation.
For that as well.
And if we were having this conversation at the start of the summer, it would be a lot different.
Yeah.
But I don't understand the optics of the whole thing, because who Al Ittihad, who have thrown money around all summer, is Al Ittihad. Thrown money around all summer, has gone, tell you what, should we make a bid for Salah now? I mean, like, that. Even if Liverpool wanted to accept it, they can't, can they? I mean, it would be a disaster. If Liverpool
accepted this one. It's far too late now. It's, you know, you're getting into the territory of there being a mutiny if they agree to this. And I said last week on the pod that I almost got the feeling that Liverpool were quite panicky about anything that might come through, because it gives them a decision to make. And it's a decision that goes straight to ownership level, really. If Mike Gordon sees that 150 million coming through the fax machine or whatever, the email, it's him and John Henry's and Tom Werner's decision to make, isn't it? And it's out of everyone else's hands. So, you know, so far they are rejecting it. They are standing firm in their insistence that he isn't for sale. I think maybe there's a school of thought that makes them think, well, we'll still get a similar fee in 12 months. Harry Kane's just gone for 90 million to a club like Bayern Munich, who historically don't pay those sorts of fees. So what will Etihad be willing to pay in 12 months if the Saudi Pro League charm offensive is still going strong? I think that'll be a much more agreeable end to Mo Salah's career in 12 months.
Because the reports are saying, like, that the only reason now Etihad have gone for it now is because they're not guaranteed to be getting him next year, because there'll be more Saudi teams who want him next year. I don't understand it from Mohamed Salah's point of view. Like, if you're staying now, just see out your contract. I know it's a lot of money, but you're staying at Liverpool because you want to play in the Champions League again. Mm-hmm. So you can understand that from his point of view, while he might just go, I've won everything now, I'll go now. Like, and it's not the high you want, but you can go back to the Muslim country, you can be closer to home, you can be that big poster boy. But it's a strange setup. Like, Al Ittihad knew if they put this bid in 2-3 weeks ago when they first started talking about it, there would have been a conversation to be had.
Yeah.
It's like almost like there's been accusations of the Caicedo bid being a PR one from Liverpool. Yeah, was this a PR bid from Saudi?
Could very well be.
They're not going to get him, but all these try.
Grease the wheels for next year.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, Dale, do you get the feeling that Salah quite fancies this? I mean, his agent came out a couple of weeks ago and said that they were staying, but he hasn't come out and said it again. Salah has said nothing. He seems like, if Liverpool accept, I'll go, but if they don't accept, I'll stay. Is that the feeling you get?
Yeah, I think so. Like, he can see it two ways, can't he? If he stays with Liverpool, gets the back in the Champions League, then wins another Premier League or a Champions League, if he's got real faith in this project, he can leave as the third highest goal scorer in the club's history, one of the greatest ever players, a true Premier League legend, on a high, he's written it all. But then it's like, well, that's a lure for what any European fan would say. We'd say, stay at Liverpool, do this, do that. That is what you want to do. You want to win the Premier League, you want to win the Champions League. But if you're a player from that part of the world and you haven't had those opportunities to play in lucrative leagues, play for the biggest prizes, it's not where everyone wants to go, and suddenly it is where everyone wants to go, that is going to change your mind as well. Yeah. Like, you are close to your family. Is that pride in doing it for the Arab countries and all of this sort of thing? Like, I know this is a strange place to take it, but in Ted Lasso, they had the Super League going along where this African owner came along and he basically wanted to sign the Nigerian player from Richmond, and it was that sort of thing. Come and play in an African country, we're going to get all the best players, and he turned it down because obviously they're writing wherever it ways it goes. But this is where fiction.
Why did he say that? Did he stay at Ted Lasso?
Yeah, he stayed at Ted Lasso's team because he decided that was home.
That's nice.
But yeah, it's like, well, that's fiction.
Spoilers for anyone.
Is this a case of life imitating art?
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, it's for me, it's, you know, if I just look at Salah and think, he always struck me as similar in the Ronaldo and Messi school of I'm going to keep myself in tip-top shape and play until I'm 36, 37, 38 and play at the highest level.
But now that could be the highest level.
Well, maybe it could, but it's not now.
No. I think years of this kind of investment for it to be anywhere near, you know, the Premier League.
And if you sell it, who's to say you can't stay in Europe and win another Champions League, Premier League, Ballon d'Or? You know,
you've got that chance at the Ballon d'Or. You can't see a Saudi Pro League player winning the Ballon d'Or anytime soon. No.
I was speaking to you yesterday about it. I was having a conversation with someone who's Middle East based earlier this week about what's going on with Salah, and this particular person works with some of the clubs out there, and the feeling that they were given from Etihad is we might not get Salah because of this desire to score all the goals and break all the records for Liverpool, and he's never shied away from that, to be fair, has he? It's something he's always professed, you know, he wants to be number one, and he's very self-confident and, you know, driven to be the very best he can be. So to essentially end your elite level career at 31 doesn't particularly strike me as something Mo Salah would do, but then again, the money that's being offered to these players is just something that I don't think any of us can really comprehend, because it's not real to us, is it?
Yeah, well, gents, we have, my watch has gone off, so that didn't work. Well, we have several hours now to the deadline. We should wait and see whether anything else transpires with Mo Salah and whether Liverpool get that Gravenberch deal over the line. But we'll say goodbye for now. We'll be back Monday. We didn't even talk about Aston Villa, but such is the day.
Pretty much how the press conference went as well. We didn't really talk about them either.
Yeah. Well, we'll be back on Monday and we will discuss that Aston Villa game, and we will discuss much more besides. We will see you then. Thanks for listening. Ta-ra.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.